life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Welcome to an extra spooky episode 65 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves blood and hates wooden stakes. It is October 27th, 2012, and joining us today is nobody.
Oh, we've been eaten by zombies and sucked dry by vampires.
It's just me and ye.
Mm-hmm.
That means no watch you watch, which is good, because we're recording another episode tomorrow, so we'll save it for then.
Phew.
But I have been to the MCM Expo today.
Mm.
I think the first time in 3 years, and probably the last time for another 3 years.
Oh, don't say that. Jealous that you went. I was at work.
Well, I got up at 4:30 this morning because I thought, oh, I'll catch the 5:30 train and I'll get there at 7. Then I looked at the timetables again and thought, well, actually, if I catch the 6:30 train, I'll get there at 7:15. So why am I up at 4:30 in the morning?
Did you go back to bed?
No, because I'd have overslept. At that point. So yeah, I caught the 6:30 train, and then I think I got there about 8:15.
See, cause... already you're on a bad day. That's far too early. I'm not surprised you didn't enjoy it.
But imagine how little I'd enjoyed it if I'd got there later and had to have queued for a long time. That was the good thing about getting there at that time, is unlike previous times, the queuing was quite short. I think it was in... They opened the doors at 9. Mm. I think last time I went, they opened them at 10. And that for the early entry. And I think I was in there by about 9:05. And that first hour was great, because there was barely anyone in there.
Mm.
So you could move around quite freely without too much trouble.
Trouble.
And then you just gradually noticed that it was getting harder to move around. It was getting smellier.
Hotter, sweatier.
Yeah. Though hotter, not too bad, because it was bloody cold in London this morning. Though probably not as cold as where you are, because I believe you had... Did you have snow?
Yep, we did. It's gone now. Like 8 hours later and it's gone.
But yeah, it was a bit chilly, so I was glad it was good to be actually inside the Expo Centre. Keep yourself. Mm. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I bought the ticket on a whim.
How much was the ticket?
£16 for a day ticket. Getting in early.
That kind of, I know you go to buy stuff. Surely if you add that onto the price of the DVDs, you could have just gone online.
I could have just gone online, definitely. You're quite right. There was a few bargains that you could get, but a lot of the stuff, it's like, that's cheap, but is it legit? Is it just a bootleg? Is that the reason why it's cheap?
Surely, they don't sell bootlegs at expos, do they?
Go,
I didn't know that.
There's so many stalls selling anime and manga merchandise.
Uh-huh.
And some of it's so cheap, and some of it is clearly bootleg. Some of it's, I don't know if it's bootleg or just Chinese. But if it's Chinese, the alarm goes off that it might be a bootleg. When there's somebody selling badges on a sheet, and it just, the top of the sheet just says badges, and it's got characters from different anime shows across the top, and you think, and there's T-shirts which aren't in any packaging, and you think, why aren't they in a package?
See, I was under the impression that Expo would be too strict to let that fly.
Well, I'm not going to name names, but I would say a great deal of stuff seems to be of dodgy nature.
Is it the same at cons, would you say? Because it's not something I've really...
No, I think anime cons in general, at least the ones we go to, are good at cracking down on bootlegs. Now, I'm sure some stuff slips through, perhaps through ignorance rather than maliciousness. Because it might not necessarily be... It might be just the wholesaler is the one who's doing the bootlegging, and the person buying from them isn't canny enough. I don't know. Some of that stuff seems... It's all these wallets with printing stuff in. When I go to Hobby Link Japan, I don't see them selling any wallets.
What, those wallets that are like plastic looking?
Yeah, and the plastic
glow in the dark. I don't deal with that kind of material.
The guys with huge, loads and loads of boxes of Fruit of the Loom t-shirts, but none of them are actually in your packaging. You just printed them up yourself without getting any like. And that's all down one end. So that's like the. It's almost like a jumble sale of.
Sin City of Expo.
Yeah. Of crap. what else was there? So I picked up. I got some stuff. They would like to have the Japan Center. I got a stall there. And notably, all their stuff was slightly more expensive than everywhere else. So that was the other thing which tipped me off that maybe.
Something to drift.
Yeah. So I picked up a couple of One Piece. Trade figures. I've got a little one of those pants on works, is it? The ones where they redesign characters all with the same wacky simplified face through different things.
Right.
So I've got a keyring thing off that and a Chopper Man bobblehead. A little bobblehead of Luffy in his robot form. From there, what else did I get? I got Big O.
Oh, season...
It's season what it says, complete collection, so you think, but only the complete collection of the first series, not of Big O2 as well. So that was £10. That wasn't too bad. We've got Ride Back for £8. That was quite cheap. But I think that was probably the limit on stuff you couldn't get for the same price online anyway of what I got. I got Panty and Stocking, but you could probably get the same price online. Secret of Mamo, which was £3, the Lupin film, which I thought, oh, that's a bargain. And then I looked on Amazon when I got home, and it's £3 on there as well. And it's like,
At least you've got it in your hands. You have to wait for some poor postman to deliver it for you.
That is true, but in the past, I picked up great bargains, but not much there. Really, I picked up better bargains at the London Super Comic Con in February. There's only really two big comic stands there. You had Panini, who did the Marvel stuff. They were doing a deal. You get 3 for 2.
Ooh.
But I'd already done that deal last when I was at the Comic Con, and there wasn't anything I wanted there this time. And Traveling Man.
Oh, yeah.
At Leeds. So I picked up a copy of Daredevil from them, which I'll probably get signed when I go to Thought Bubble.
Nice.
Because Mark Waid's going to be there, who wrote that. But but the other good thing about getting there early, I could say I got in quickly, and there's not too many cosplayers. But as I was leaving about 10:30, it was torrent after torrent of human detritus walking into the expo center. It's like the trades open up and just humanity pours out.
Did you see anybody we know?
No.
That's a bit of time.
I saw nobody. I think Leon was tweeting during the time that he was still in bed and he wasn't going to come. But beyond that, I think people are there now after it's closed.
Yeah.
And still complaining.
I want to know, what was Expo's big draw this year? Or at least...
Doctor Who on Friday. And also some... cheapo science fiction film with one of the hobbits in. Billy Boyd. That was about it, really. Otherwise, there's a lot of sci-fi programming. Oh, and of course, a Primeval panel, because whenever I go, there always seems to be a Primeval panel.
Oh, see, I can't believe people like that program.
No, nor can I.
No joke. I genuinely... It's worse than a kid's show. It's so bad. But never mind. So will you be going back in May?
No.
Which is the next... Oh.
Not unless there's anything. I'm going to wait. I'm at least never going to buy a ticket until I've actually announced who's going to be there. Because that was the problem. I bought a ticket before they'd announced anything. And then as they were announcing things, I was like, why am I going?
Very fun.
People from shows on sci-fi that I've never seen.
And never will.
Yeah. No idea. Very. It's an odd mix in there, because you got all the people there for the TV stuff, and the people there for the cosplay, the people there to buy figures which may or may not be bootlegs. And you've got loads and loads of artists doing sketches and selling their own comics there as well. But again, I'm going to
fancy grabbing a sketch. Not fancy.
Well, I'm going to Thought Bubble as well. That's the other problem. Is
probably better people there.
Yeah, well, there definitely are better people there. Yes, I don't know what purpose it serves really, except for the media. Oh, there's loads of video games. You could play video games as well.
See, the thing with it's always good on paper when someone says, "Oh, blah blah blah," there, but you've got to stand in queue and you only get one go.
That is true. It's like once you'd queue to get in, then you could then queue to have a go on the Wii U or have a go on Halo, whatever, or have a.
Oh, Halo 4 was there.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, damn it! I would queue to play. But no, no. But seriously, that's what. I don't know. I don't get why people are so willing to stand around to then stand around some more to get the tiniest bit of maybe not even fun to play a game that's not very good.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been that excited about video games. I don't think so. So I'm not one of these people who stays up late for a Street Fighter tournament.
That's completely different. huge difference.
Again, staying up late for a game you're not even playing yourself.
But that's the beauty. I don't know why, but that's the beauty.
Well, there you go. I suppose it's a bit like me staying up late too if I wanted to watch
a wrestling. Yeah. Yeah.
But at least there's room for improvisation there. You're not set. You're not fixed within the same set of moves.
That's true. I know. I suppose you can do whatever you like. And yeah, okay. Okay. It's not even worth a debate.
No, it's not.
Because obviously games are better than wrestling. So that was your Halloween. Does that sum up this kind of dreadful experience of Halloween?
I've been to worse expos, let's say that. Because it was cold, there wasn't quite so many annoying people outside. There was loads of people dressed up as zombies for some reason, because I got on a train and there was somebody who I couldn't tell whether they were dressed up as a zombie to go to the expo or whether they just had a really bad night out and had grazed their forehead.
Oh god. I'm hoping it was a costume for their sake. I'm all for good zombie things, don't get me wrong, but this Derren Brown thing's just happened, so it'd be not that people need an excuse to like zombies. But people,
I think
like
they need an excuse to stop liking them. To be honest,
I know.
Pack it in. So
zombies used to be cool.
Dress up as Sasquatches instead. the other good thing, you don't randomly run into quite so many cosplayers when you go really early. It's not like you're getting on a train and it's Walter.
Everyone's in a cosplayer.
Yeah. Though when I got on the train at Didcot, there was a guy in a green wig waiting for the train, the same train I was getting on.
Why didn't you sit with him?
Because there was a guy wearing a green wig. Did you not hear the thing about the green wig that I just said?
See, I need to start doing that more. When I go to a con, I guarantee in Newcastle I will see somebody who I don't necessarily know. I can just pinpoint, right, they're going to the con. I should probably embrace them.
Maybe tell me how it works out, because I've never done it. I've always avoided any sort of...
I'll probably be talking about things I don't want to talk about all the way down, when I could have been listening to music on my iPod. Like, so
exactly. Somebody talking very fast at you.
About Bleach.
Yes. Because there used to be a guy in Spalding who me and John would see in Spalding, and we'd see at the cons, and we'd never talk to him in Spalding, and we'd never talk to him at the cons.
But you literally knew every time you saw him, that's that guy.
He lives in the same town as us, but we refused to acknowledge it. I'm sure he probably thought the same thing about us. Well, I've seen those two guys around in Spalding. Why don't they talk to me?
I wonder if he still goes to cons.
I think he does, yeah. He always wears the same few... costume, same. He just cosplay, but it's always like the same few different ones. Trying to remember which ones he's got. He's got like a.
You know a lot about him.
I know his cosplays. He does does Gendao from Evangelion.
Oh yeah.
He does. I think like a generic Pat Labor uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. The guy who's based on Clint Eastwood out of Zabungle.
And that's his part.
Those are his costumes, yeah. And he'll sort of cycle through them, I think, year on year. Mm. Yeah, so if he's listening to this, he'll have just identified himself.
Mm. Show yourself. See, I like when I see the same person do the same cosplay every year. It's like a little tradition.
Is it really?
Yeah, I know somebody who does Sonosuke from Rurouni Kenshin every single year.
You're a big fan of Lord Ashram.
Oh, does he do the same? Or is that
yes,
just...
he does his Lord Ashram cosplay.
See, what is Lord Ashram?
I think he's a character out of... God, my brain's gone blank now. It's the D&D type thing with the elves.
From
Lodoss War.
Yeah. I've never seen him wear it.
I think maybe he's just got too big for it now. But he used to wear it every year.
His ego, yeah. That is physique. But yeah, I know that guy. No, that was Lord Ashram, though. All right, but yeah, I know the gopher. Anyway, that's not too much cosplay talk, especially on an expo weekend.
That is true.
Summon beasts we don't deal with if we talk about that on an expo eve.
Yeah, well, yes, because they're doing their cosplay competition tomorrow. Or whether it's Euro cosplay, is it? Or.
Cosplay like Fever? Is it Cosplay Fever is a magazine.
They're cosplay booths and things for people to have their fun.
Right, here's the question.
Yeah.
Will someone win it that is cosplaying an anime or something completely unrelated? What's going to win?
I don't think it matters for that because it's not an anime convention.
Expo is different. I will give it that. But still, I don't associate cosplay with other things as much. I think it's good because I like kind of branching out, but let's hope no primeval cosplayers win.
What would they dress up as? A dinosaur?
A poor CG dinosaur. That's what you dress up.
Ben Miller in a suit.
Or the girl from S Club 7. Who's in Primeval.
Right, UK releases, some of which were there today. There was, and I never know how to pronounce the first one, is it Puella Magi Madoka Magica? I have the DVD and Blu-ray sets of that.
I need to pick this up.
You pick it up and tell me what it's like, because I'm not...
Because everyone seems to love it.
Oh, I didn't like the first episode, and I just can't be bothered watching the rest of it.
Like, people who tend not to watch this kind of thing love this thing, so there's got to be something about it that makes it worth it.
Well, to be fair, it's not the sort of thing that people who watch... it's not the sort of thing you're saying it is there. I don't know. We'll get into more of that next year when I make you watch a load of magical girl shows, I think.
Yeah.
And then we could watch this as well, but I don't know, it's... I'd rather stick to what making you watch ones which are actually made for little girls rather than ones which are made for adult men.
See, I should reverse it and make you watch this. Actually, no, I don't want to say that because it might be terrible. It might be like Spice and Wolf all over again.
And I just don't like the writing is what I didn't like about it. It was just... And also the character design.
Hmm.
The backgrounds were great.
I'll give it a look because I hear good stuff, as I say.
And also out is Bleach Season 8, which apparently is the Arrancar, the Fierce Fight arc, which is far beyond the point at which I was caring about Bleach.
See, I don't know what this... I've heard the name Arrancar mentioned.
It's those guys who dress in white with bits of skull attached to their faces. It's like the sexy Hollows.
Right.
You remember the Hollows at the start of the series were also...
Yeah. But these are the
humanoid ones.
So I would like to watch Bleach because I've seen a big chunk of it and I stopped watching it, and I feel I miss out on some of it anyway.
I think if you watched a big chunk of it and you stopped, you probably watched the best chunk. Because as I understand it, kind of repeats itself, and also repeats filler arcs from Yu Yu Hakusho.
I've got all that ready to watch, actually.
Because it's the same director, and he had to fill in gaps in Yu Yu Hakusho, so why, when he's got to fill in time on Bleach, why not use the same storylines?
I bet he wore the same cosplay every year to cons, Mr. Repetition.
Right, let's move on to our main topic, something which, despite there being two of them, is not that repetitious, which is Vampire Hunter D and Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust.
Was that a vampire voice?
It was not, no. It wasn't intentional. Oh. I was just rolling the L.
These two.
So, Vampire Hunter D. This is the show that I believe last year on the Hero Pyrrha episode, our previous Halloween episode, when we were running down the top cartoon vampire things, I suddenly realised that I had actually seen, as I was looking at the plot synopsis. So I think I saw this in 1995, based on, I wasn't really watching anime before then, and the friend's shared house at university I watched it in, that would have been the year that particular stinky house was occupied. The houses he and his mates lived in gradually improved until the final year it was an actually habitable building. I'm watching it again now. There's only two things I really remembered, which was the hand and the was it witch women, the snake women?
Yeah, they're like big serpents.
Three of them. So when was the first time you saw this?
A good few years ago now. 2005 maybe. Yeah, 2005. I was like well behind on this. I'm sure that's got to be right. Yeah, I've got it on DVD. So whenever it kind of, when they come out on DVD over here,
The manga video one, which is the very black cover in the car with the car.
Very, very black. Yeah.
Which sets you up for the quality of the picture on the DVD. God. But yeah, this is a 1985 now. Some people say OVA, some have said a film, depending on where you look. Based on the novels by, what is the guy's name? Hideyuki Kikuchi, which is also the novels illustrated by Yoshitaka Amano.
He's done one or two things
in his career. and the film is directed by Toyo Ishida, who directed Fist of the North Star.
Oosh. But yeah, as you mentioned, it's very dark. Not so much in its tone. Well, it kind of is, I suppose. But it's just so dark. It's a bad kind of quality.
It's a bad quality print.
Is that actually what it is? Because I was never too sure whether it was just, you know, because it's sometimes too difficult to see what's going on.
A German anime distributor got a new master and then remastered it.
Oh.
And if you look on YouTube, you can find that, and the picture's much clearer there.
I'd be interested not to watch it again, because I've only just rewatched this, but at least to kind of see how it looks.
Because there are some scenes where you can't see what's going on at all.
Unless someone opens their eyes.
Yeah.
The eyes stand out fine. Maybe a little too much, because the eyes are like too bright. But so what's it about? I'm going to do the synopsis.
Go for it.
Short and sweet, it's easy. There's a young girl named Doris, and she is bitten by a count named Magnus Lee. And basically, Dee gets hired to kill Magnus Lee to obviously rid this girl named Doris of the kind of the vampiric curse. And that's a good synopsis, isn't it? See, I never know whether to give any more away, any less away. That's a good synopsis.
There's not much more to give away, really.
No, there's not.
Because, it is just constantly trying to kidnap Doris. Doris gets kidnapped. Rescue Doris. Doris gets kidnapped again. Rescue her again. It's pretty much a Western. In fact, both the films are Westerns. Mm. I think people said this is specifically referencing Shane.
I read that somewhere, which I'm not really sure what that actually is. So.
Have you seen Shane?
I've not.
It's been such a long time that I wouldn't be able to point out where exactly the references are. I don't think I've seen it since I was a kid.
1953.
I was not a kid then. I did not see it when it came out. But
A weary gunfighter attempts to settle down with a homestead family, but a smouldering settler conflict forces him to act. So it sounds a bit like your Jimbo kind of thing. So, I guess so, yeah. But yeah, it is very westerny.
Yeah.
Definitely. So yeah, I mean, I actually seen this after Bloodlust back in the day.
Uh-huh.
So I completely watched it in the wrong order. So it was weird because I was actually far fonder of this one than I was Bloodlust at the time.
Really?
Really? I don't know what it was about. I have no clue. Looking back, I was an idiot. Like, not to say this is dreadful at all, because like, there's some really good bits. Like, the opening scene's pretty good. You see Doris, and she's like, I don't know what she's doing, but she's...
She's trying to keep a dinosaur off her... She's
off her farm or something.
Yeah. There's some. Because I wasn't sure what was going on. I thought there was some sort of dinosaur, werewolf, vampire team-up we were going to be dealing with, but... Unfortunately, that was not the case.
But yeah, basically she's shooting these big things and then her horse gets demolished, as one way to put it, and then the vampire turns up. Now, I think that's a pretty good opening scene, but then it kind of dances around a lot, this film. Back and forth. Would you agree?
Yeah, because there's only like sort of three locations, really, isn't there? There's the farmstead, there's the town, and there's Count Magnus's
castle.
Yeah, it's kind of. But there's other stuff going on as well. There's the stuff with Magnus's daughter and the henchman who wants to rise up in the ranks.
And become like a noble being.
Yeah.
Oh, there's stuff going on, but. You don't really care about that stuff. You're not meant to. Maybe you're meant to, but it's all about D. What is D?
He is a dampier.
See, I've read a few different spellings for that. Whereas apparently in this, they call him a dump peel.
In Bloodlust, they don't, they?
In Bloodlust. And where it's meant to be a, as he said, a dampier, which is somewhat Turkish, isn't it? I was reading it about the origin. And it's basically a vampire having a child with a human.
Yeah, like Blade.
Like Blade. Blade, yeah. Does Blade refer to himself as a dampier or not?
I can't remember whether he does or he doesn't.
I would like to think he does. And if he doesn't, I think they should have played on the fact, because it's a cool word.
He's on the list of fictional dampiers on Wikipedia.
Is there a top of it? It's got to be D.
It's not in the alphabetical order, so Blades first. Then you've got Connor from Angel, then D.
Good.
And then various other ones.
Yeah. And should we mention now that D's father is presumably Count Dracula?
Yes. Which always comes as a surprise at the end of both these films.
But it's an epic revelation in the first film.
It is. It's more
of, so in the first one.
Yeah, because in Bloodlust, it's got to go. They sort of go, "Ooh, is your father the king of the vampires or something?" Don't they? Mm. Rather than
that's some shoes to step into. Jesus Christ!
Well, I was looking at the wiki page. Apparently, Dracula does show up in some of the novels.
Yeah, I was actually. Like, I'm really intrigued to look into, like, the whole, like, story and, like, the everything beyond the film, basically, these two films, because it seems so interesting. I would love to see more films in relation to this little world.
It took 15 years for the second one to come out, so...
I guess.
give it another 3 years. Maybe if Kawajiri manages to do his new Ninja Scroll.
Oh, that'd be the best. If only you released them back to back, it's never going to happen. Instead, we got Highlander. Have you seen Highlander?
I have not, no.
It's such a letdown.
I've not heard.
A massive letdown. Huge, unbelievable letdown. Oh, but nevertheless, But yeah, I mean, there's so many stories that they could work off. And I would even watch a woman getting bit at the start and then Dee getting hired to kill the vampire again, but in a different setup. That's all this is. That's all the second one is, really.
Yeah.
And it works.
Indeed it does, yeah. But still on the first... best thing I liked about the first one is those sequences as he's entering Lee's castle, where it's all sort of the mutant squishy monsters.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was my favourite sequence, because sometimes the animation's a bit, shall we politely say, variable on the first film. Doris's character design changes from scene to scene, almost. It's like, where is her fringe? How big is her forehead going to be in this scene?
It's true. She does look very... I would say out of place, but Dee looks fine until he opens his eyes or tilts his head up in the first film. I think his eyes are totally wrong. They're probably totally right, but I just don't like the look of them. There's something about the look of his eyes in the first film.
Yeah, it's hard to get that Amano style, particularly the style he was using by this point.
Yeah.
Because he was an animator and character design at the start of his career. Because he did things like Speed Racer and Gatchaman and also the Tatsunoko stuff. But yeah, once he'd sort of become his sort of, I don't know how you describe it. How would you describe
it?
It's sort of watercolour, pencils and watercolour, really, isn't it, I think?
I always associate the style with the Final Fantasy covers he did.
Yeah.
That's what I was like, fire it back to. So it's like a weird, almost kind of light. It's, I don't know. I can't really describe it. You know it if you see it.
Yeah. We're art dummies. We don't know the correct words.
I know.
To properly describe it. I'm sure there is.
It's almost pale looking, like feathery. I don't know.
Yeah, feather. I think because there's often feathers in, and it's lots of detail as well, which obviously does not translate well to animation.
Especially not this film.
No. And apparently some of the character design stuff in the from the novel's different as well, because all the henchmen are much less insane in the novel from what I was reading. There was a guy with superhuman speed who is now a guy who flies around on a glider.
You don't see him much, do you?
No, he gets dispensed fairly quickly. There's a guy who's a large man in the book and turned into an enormous giant in the cartoon. And there's a guy who could control spiders in the book, apparently, and in the movie is now a hunchback who has loads of spiders living inside his hunch.
And the two cool guys, well, at least one of the cool characters, you don't get to see do anything. You know the guy who, he turns up with like a gas mask on almost, to give a, basically, there's a candle in the film that can kind of disable vampires just by, they say smelling its scent or something, but apparently it's just by looking at it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He turns up and he's got like a big cloak and a weird cyborg almost.
Yeah, I was wondering whether that was supposed to be one of the other characters.
Kind of going undercover.
Whether it's the Count himself.
Possibly.
Because he's the only one who needs to wear that to go out in daylight. Because his daughter's a half... She's a dampier in the movie, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah. You don't find that out till later, I don't think.
No.
But still, yeah, it's definitely not her.
Because she's tiny as well.
Yeah, exactly. Unless she's on stilts to walk around. But yeah, I wanted to know who that character was, and I kind of forgot that you don't see anything more of him, or he, or she.
Yeah.
You know.
It is a bit odd.
So would you mention more about Dee, what he's all about?
He's all about killing vampires. Pretty much. He's not a complicated man.
He doesn't say much.
No, he doesn't say much. He wears a big
hat. He's got this thing in his hand. Don't forget the hand.
Oh, yes, he's got... Oh, yes, that's probably the biggest thing. He has a sarcastic symbiote living inside his left hand.
Does it ever get a name?
No, I think he's technically called Left Hand. Or Left
That'd be
Hand,
such though. An... If I could pick anywhere on someone's body to be, except obviously like genitalia and stuff, then the palm of someone's hand would be terrible. Much like being there when he climbs out of the bath on a morning. You're just going to be squashed against...
Oh, I should say, it's not just a mouth, is it? It's a face. It's got a nose as well. Yeah.
But the funny thing is, it looks so different in the first film than the second one. At least in the second film, it has features, whereas in the first film, it's like a set of eyes.
And it kind of looks like he's been drawn by a completely different animation studio than the rest of them.
Yeah, he looks shopped. Someone's photoshopped him in. But apparently he can kind of suck in powers and...
Yes.
All sorts of stuff, really. He's pretty healthy.
Yeah, he can eat for himself.
Yeah,
he can reattach himself if he's chopped off.
Mm-hmm. Like, do you find more about him in the novels, or do you have no clue?
I think so, yeah. I did briefly look. I think there's, like, vague hints as to what he is. But since
it's such a good story. Like, the world it's set in, at least, it seems very...
Yeah, it's a post... Yeah, it's post-apocalyptic. And which has apparently created mutants, but not the vampires. Apparently the vampires were around before, and possibly, I think they were actually involved in causing whatever the apocalypse was in the first place. Because I was looking at the list of differences, and apparently another one is in the books, is that they've genetically altered humans, so they can't remember things what which happened? Hurt vampires. So if somebody accidentally shows a vampire across and it affects them, they won't remember that it did affect them. Whereas in the movie, there's crosses all over the place.
Oh, in the most ridiculous of places, at least in the sequel.
Yeah.
At least, if there was somewhere to whack a cross, they will put a cross there. Jesus Christ. I was actually laughing at some of the product placement. But yeah, let's think what else I need to mention about the first film.
Oh, there's lots of 80s suspense synth. There's a really tough horse. There's loads of cyborg horses.
Oh, the cyborg horses are cool.
These horses, one of those 80s tough horses, because when I was watching it, I hadn't realised it was the Fist of the North Star director directing it. Because that's obviously another place where there's tough horses. Dee's isn't quite as big as those ones, though.
It's still pretty... A cyborg horse is such a great idea. Because I totally forgot in both films it was kind of cyborg horses. But it works. But other than that, I'm trying to think... It's only a short film. It's only like an hour and 10 minutes or something.
80 minutes long.
80 minutes long. Ah, damn it. I was close. But I don't know, it doesn't... There's times where you think it's far further through the film, and then...
That's because they keep on capturing Doris, and they're losing her again. Doris has also got an annoying little brother, who manages to fall a ridiculously long... This castle that this vampire owns is very tall, and he hasn't got many ceilings because this kid just falls and falls and falls and falls before somebody rescues him.
I didn't actually pick up on that. I didn't even think he was that much of an annoying kid. I really didn't.
Maybe not. Maybe there's been more annoying kids.
Like, I'm usually the first one to pick up if there's an annoying character in something, and this guy isn't.
He does the sort. He still does the sort of thing. It's like, I'm going to rescue my sister from the vampire's castle. Huh. You're a child. And there's Dee over there with a big hat and a huge sword.
He knows what he's doing.
Yes.
It's his job. It's his profession. I don't like the doctor. There's like a professor that lives in the village or something, and I just think he doesn't look right. I don't know, I think it's his ridiculous hair. He just looks so out of place in this weird world of mutants. He's the one that looks out of place. I don't know why. But thankfully he gets turned. Spoilers. But no, it's a weird film because I remember liking it a lot more than what I did this time round. I think it's the darkness ruins it. Maybe I was a little bit more kind of easy please back then in terms of, it's dark, I can live with that. But now I was squinting,
Well, you got HD TV as well, you're watching it on probably as opposed to...
I was watching it on my monitor, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it didn't look that good. Fair cop. I mean, for 1985, I know there's probably a lot better things out then, but for what it is...
But luckily, there's a better Vampire Hunter D movie you can watch.
So much better.
And that is Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust, which apparently is based on the third novel, Demon Death Chase.
Epic title.
And this kind of is got a bit of The Searchers in it, would you say? I think there's a lot more of the vampire as a metaphor for Native American going on up until a point, at which point once the real villain shows up, and at which point that goes out the window. But in this, Dee and another set of bounty hunters called the Marcus Brothers have been hired by the father of a young woman, Charlotte, who's been abducted by Baron Mayor Link, who is a vampire nobleman. And they got set off in pursuit. Link's got his own henchmen, again, which seem often as they are to have been rolled up on a random superhero generator.
I think we need to give these bunch more credit than they deserve.
More credit than they deserve?
Credit than you're giving them.
Okay.
So they even deserve more credit than what they deserve. go on, sorry.
And so they pursue them, people die, and eventually they get to where the Baron's taking the woman, which is the home of Countess Carmilla, who turns out to be the real villain. Dun, dun, dun. And there's vampire spaceships, all sorts of things going on. These villains, yes, these henchmen. There's Caroline.
Mm-hmm. She's
She's the one who changes shape.
Yeah,
who looks
like
a bit
a tree lady.
Yeah, she looks a bit like one of Magneto's Savage Land mutates from the X-Men comics. Bengay.
He's a cool villain.
Who manipulates shadows, and Mashira, who is a werewolf.
Oh, be more specific. Werewolf chest man.
Oh, yes, I forgot about
him. He was such a... Like, I remember... I don't remember him. And then I remember when his chest suddenly turned into a big snout.
Yes, he turns into a werewolf, and then his chest turns into another werewolf.
And I'm kind of pleased he doesn't get much screen time. I don't like everything's all well and good. Literally, everything is all well and good. It's fantastic. Then all of a sudden, he transforms. Let it down.
And this film.
So,
has...
when did you see this? Obviously, you were the one lucky for you.
Yesterday.
This was a first time viewing.
Yes.
Unbelievable. As I say, I saw this before the original film. So to think that I went back and preferred the original film better than this it's madness. But I take that statement back now. It's such a brilliant. I love this. I want to see if you picked up on something. Do you think it continues straight after the first film? Because at the end of the first film, I'm sure you see him at this kind of like almost like in a building that looks a bit like the church he goes to at the very beginning.
I do not pick up on
that. It may just be a weird coincidence. It may not look like it at all, but it's very pale and deserty. So I put two and two together and thought that maybe we're trying to kind of, as if you just went from thing to thing. But I don't know. But I think this is a lot. It's so cinematic, especially early on in the film. Like the scenes in this film it probably wouldn't even be as good in a live action, but it's so epic. Like, there's a scene where, when you first meet the Marcus brothers, It's so epic. It's perfect. It's like something from The Expendables, but done better. Do you not think? First turn up?
I've not seen The Expendables.
Oh, first time watching Bloodlust. Oh, God. But no, the Marcus brothers, obviously there's a female in the group who turns out to be quite a large role in the story. But they're like kind of this epic bunch. Like, how would you describe them in terms of, would you compare them to any actors or anything?
No, they've each got a gimmick. Like the henchmen of Maya having a gimmick, they've all got their own gimmick as well. So I can't remember their names, though. I neglected to write
them down. Borgoff is this big guy with this like epic facial hair.
So he's the oldest one, the one who's in charge.
Mm-hmm. And he can shoot a shit ton of arrows in no time, literally. Then there's Kyle, who's a guy like, he's got like a, what would you even call that weapon? I've seen them popping up a lot. It's like the blade that he spins.
I've no idea. But he's like the ninja-y type one.
Yep. And then there was a guy called Grove, who's like this spiritual, like he fights with his spirit, I suppose.
Yeah, he's got a superpowered astral projection. But they have to drug him up, though, in order for him to do it.
And that's a pretty epic power. And then, is there one more? There is the big guy.
Yes.
Who has a big stakey hammer. One end's like a giant steak, I guess.
Do you remember his name? Because I don't.
No, I don't. He doesn't last long. Polk?
I don't know.
I don't know. But either way, he doesn't do much. But and then there's the main girl, Leela.
Yes.
And she only has a gun. She's not really that good at
all. It's a wacky gun, though. It blows enormous holes in things when she shoots.
Which is helpful against vampires.
Yeah. No, does she actually ever hit a vampire?
I think it's during the opening scene when they're introduced, they're in this big
truck. Oh, they get attacked by loads of zombies, don't they?
They fight all these zombies in this truck that they ride, which has crucifix headlights, which, if anything, it just makes, and the windows are crucifixes, so they basically can't see out their own windows, which is ridiculous. And she shoots outside of one of those windows and it blows like a hole in the metal, hitting one of the, see, I'm very precise with this film. And that leads me onto my favorite visual in the film, when Dee climbs onto the top of the hill and he's stood in front of the moon, well, on his horseback in front of the moonlight, and he's got like his cape out. I love that scene. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I think I know which one you mean.
You think?
Well, I watched it in two halves because I watched the first half yesterday and I was just falling asleep. Not because of the film, but just because I was tired.
That's fair enough. Because it's a lot longer than, it's 1 hour 40 minutes, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, thereabouts.
So, no, I think there's some great scenes in this. And it looks fantastic. If every film was as good, like, what year is this, 2000?
Yeah, 2000.
That's unbelievable. Do you think it looks as good as its time as?
I think it's aged very well, unlike the other one, which I think has both literally not aged well in terms of the print and just in terms of sort of the look of the thing. Whereas this is pretty spot on all the way through in terms of consistency and lots of great scenes.
So many great scenes. I forgot how much I loved it. I actually forgot. Like, I was literally on the edge of my seat because I remember different parts, different lines the characters say. And I've got such a soft... I lost that soft spot for this film and this rekindled it.
The only thing I'd say against it is some of the fights drag on a little long in the middle of the film.
I think that it does lose its pace. It's kind of when he fights the tree lady. It loses its pace around there. I don't know why.
That is the exact spot I was thinking of.
And it's a shame. But then again, it builds you up. It needs to slow you down. You need a breather from how awesome everything else is.
Nolt is the brother with the hammer.
Ah. Voiced by John DiMaggio.
Yes.
And that name rings a bell.
It's Bender from Futurama.
Ah.
And Jake from Adventure Time and various other things.
Ah, fancy that. Fancy that.
In fact, he does quadruple duty. He plays four different characters in this film, apparently.
Who's he do?
Sheriff.
Yeah.
Machira, I don't know who that is, and John Elborn, is that one of the brothers or the dad?
Possibly, I don't know who
Machira is. I'm not sure.
What's your... I know we're kind of jumping around with this. What's your favourite scene in the film? Because mine isn't an action scene.
I'm trying to think now. I could like the start where he's walking in and all the family and the henchmen are pointing guns at him.
A bit good.
Because the brother doesn't trust him. I'm trying to think. I'm sure there's some stuff out the ending that I quite like when it all goes a bit trippy.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy at the
end. I did like the blood flowing up the stairs near the end. It's a good effect. Okay, so what was yours?
Oh, mine's like completely story related rather than like visual. Completely story related, and there's a scene where basically Dee's horse falls off a cliff and dies. It's not a big part, really. If anyway, he ends up in the city, he's about to buy a new one, and the sheriff turns up saying, "No, you don't." And then the old man who he's buying it off tells a story about a dumpier, as it's called in this film, saving a group of kids from a vampire. And it turns out that Dee was that vampire. Dee was the dumb peel, and that old man was one of the kids. And I just, I think it's like a great little kind of insight in terms of how old Dee is. You know,
It also plays into the metaphor for Native Americans as vampires there as well. So if you think he's like a half blood tracker, so to speak, who's being hired to hunt down his own people, almost. And also, yeah, you got the racism there of that town where they don't want anybody with vampire blood.
Even after he saved all the children, he was still kind of sent away and nearly killed, I presume. That's my favourite scene in the film. It's nice, it's heartfelt.
Yeah, I think once that combines with the fact that you realise that Charlotte and Maya are in love with each other, and genuine love, as opposed to kidnap and be my wife love we had on the first episode. Well, it's not so much that. Is that the one in the first film is the vampire has a thing for human women, doesn't he? But not so interested in getting their consent straight away.
No, he's rapey in the first.
Well, he's bitey. And then he's going to wait until they've turned into a vampire. And then,
do off with them.
And then you'll be a vampire and you'll be happy about it.
But you'll not be interested in them then. That's the thing. But yeah, no. The second film has a lot more substance. Not much more. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like saying it's a really deep film. But in comparison to the first film, it's like they said, right, so we'll do a similar story, but we'll add a little bit more to it. I think it feels better structured and everything.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think you're right. Because there's stuff in the first film which gives it a bit more depth, I think, with the stuff with the henchman who wants to work his way up. But it all sort of plays out kind of out of the blue at the end when he suddenly switches sides.
I completely forgot about that as well. I totally forgot.
After this, he's just been the most murderous man all the way through the film, and then all of a sudden, I'll save the kid brother because I was insulted by my boss.
You only have to wait another, what do you say, 50 years to become a nobleman? It's not that long. It's like, to be fair, it obviously
he did laugh at him, though. That was the other thing.
Oh, big deal. If I bloody threw a hissy fit every time my boss laughed at me. But no, I love this. I forgot how much I loved it, really. I came away after watching this thing and Damn.
And also, do you think it would play out better without Countess Carmilla?
Yes.
It does sort of switch, like I said, that metaphor comes to a screeching halt once she's introduced. And I think that plays possibly more into the ongoing theme of the books flowing through. Because I did it mention in the film or did I miss it? But I'm looking at the synopsis and it said apparently Count Dracula was the one who'd...
He kind of, yeah, with Carmella, he plunged the sword into her. And, but yeah, it's all of a sudden there. All of a sudden. What do you think the rocket, the spaceship's for?
It's to get to the moon. Yeah, vampires on the moon.
Which is pretty epic. Do you think that, like, it's nothing much more deeper than just its freedom? It's kind of...
Yeah, it's like you can go to a place where you won't be affected by the
pestered
sun.
And stuff, yeah.
No, you bloody starve death, because there's no blood. What are you going to drink when you go up?
Blood? They import blood from Earth.
Yeah, because I was wondering whether... Yeah, because obviously you don't realise straight away that she's just a spirit there. She's a ghost of a vampire. Because I thought maybe this was something there wasn't actually anything they were going to, and there wasn't actually a spaceship.
Oh, it was just her.
It was just a lure she used to do to get other vampires to drag humans to her. But it turns out there was a spaceship. Now, whether there was actually anywhere on this Night City, was it? Or City of Nights?
Yeah, what they called it, yeah. It's a metropolis on the moon where vampires live. It sounds great. But yeah, it's weird because she literally does come out of nowhere. There's suddenly the left hand talks about her, and there you go. There's Carmella.
Yeah, but we do get, because of that, we do get the great line, "Nice hat."
I know. I have to think what was going on there. I genuinely, because she's got a ridiculous hairpiece.
I was
going
to say, she's not even wearing a hat.
Nice hair would have made more sense.
Yeah.
Would have made sense anyway.
It would have, yes. Very nice.
But she looks pretty ridiculous in terms of... But she's like that stereotype...
Yes, lady vampire.
...mystic vampire lady, I don't know. Oh, there's so many epic scenes. I remember some of the, like, where Dee stands at the edge of the desert and all these big sand stingray. Is it manta rays?
I think I know what you mean, yes. And he rides across the backs of them.
He rides across them. That's not even the cool bit. It's as soon as they start coming out of the ground and he's kind of like on the edge of the desert watching. So, Dee is just a cool looking character. And I think he's a better character in this than he is in the first film, tenfold. I think he's too talky in the first film.
Yeah, and apparently he's even less... even in the first film, apparently he's quieter than he is in the book.
Oh, God.
So...
Never shuts up.
Giving it all that.
I think he's a very good character, and I kind of wish... I know we don't go back on lists, but this guy could have made it in my hard men list. He's pretty hard.
Is he?
The scene that just sums up how cool he is near the end, Carmella puts a spell on him, and then you see him kind of... Because obviously he doesn't like to use his vampire abilities if he can. He keeps things pretty basic. And then you kind of see him just say, screw this, and he's got his fangs out. And he just looks so epic. Not think? Because yeah. he's very feminine as well. Very feminine.
It's the same thing that happens in the first film, at which point then they go, ooh, who's your daddy? In lots of many ways. Not putting it quite like that. But that is the thing the villain always goes, hang on, how come you're so powerful as a half-vampire? How powerful must your dad be?
And it's Count Dracula.
It's Count Dracula. Obviously, she's got a reason to suspect that, because he was the one who did her in the first place.
Did her in, yeah.
That's the thing I have. I didn't write many notes on the second one. Nice hat was the only note I wrote. I did want to mention that if you look on the Wikipedia page for the first film, there's a translation of a quote from Kikuchi on the Laserdisc where apparently the look of Vampire Hunter D is based on Phil Collins.
I don't even know.
My first image of Dee was the gunfighter video of Phil Collins. In this video, Phil was wearing American Western gunfighter clothing with Japanese samurai gear. And that is the...
I don't even recall how it looks.
The music video to Don't Lose My Number. I don't recall this song at all.
Nah, it's Phil Collins.
That's because it was not released in the UK, are they?
Oh, right, okay. But I just don't... It's such a letdown that he's based on that. Don't get me wrong.
Well, I don't think Amano really did much more beyond that. I think he took it fairly far away from looking at Phil like Phil Collins. Otherwise, he'd be this short, bald guy wandering around.
And I've got like a little clip of the video up now, and he looks like a cowboy.
Yeah, I don't know where I looked.
He's a regular cowboy.
I didn't know where he's seeing this Japanese samurai gear from.
I mean, Dee's design is cool. I think it's very cool, and it's. I just want to see some more Vampire Hunter D stuff. So I don't ask for much, and I may have to try and get like the novels themselves. Can you get hold of anything related to the rest of the story or anything like that?
Have a look. I think you could. I think some have been done in English. Excuse me, I've got hiccups, which isn't the greatest thing for a podcast. English editions. On May the 11th, 2005, the first edition, official English translation was released by DH Press and Digital Manga Publishing.
Epic.
As of September 2012, the first 13 novels have been released in English.
September 2012?
Yes. So
that's like last month?
Yes, so somebody's been keeping this page up to date.
Yes, that's actually good to know. I might have to, because I've got money left this month. But no, I just think there's the things I like most are Dee and his kind of potential past that you kind of left to guess, or not even really think about in too much depth. But like, I suppose I'm one of those people where I'm kind of fascinated by like what other adventures he could get up to, basically. Would you agree? Would you think he's a?
I think you're right. Yeah, and there's a spin-off series as well, set in the past. Ooh. About a vampire. I can't remember what that's called, but yeah.
Oh, so... my god! Apparently, there's a live action adaptation being in the mix.
Yeah, I don't know whether anything's happening with that though, because I seem to remember that being announced ages ago. Because I think there was talk that they were going to cast a woman as Dee.
Oh, that would be. I don't know. That would work.
Yeah, he possibly could, yeah, if it was the right person cast.
Yeah, definitely, actually. But there's a lot of scenes in the second film that would go perfect in any film. It's so epic. It's I don't think it would work as well, some of the scenes, because obviously some things look better animated, simple as, and I probably just couldn't do that. If you want to see live-action Vampire Hunter D, go and watch Van Helsing. That's as close as you'll get.
I didn't see that. I had the opportunity to and didn't.
Well, you see Hugh Jackman wearing a big rimmed hat, so I guess it's as close as you'll get. Dee is a better character than Alucard in Helsing as well. He's more interesting. I think he's such an interesting character. I think I've got like a total man crush on Dee.
I quite like Alucard in Helsing just because he's
cool.
He's just he's a bit of a dick. Which Dee doesn't really have.
What do you think about the last scene in Bloodlust? There's a bit of a build-up to it, basically. The female lead mentions...
Again, I wasn't too... I didn't think it was that great a scene, partly because it spins off part of the film I thought was not great earlier on. Yeah.
That's where it does stem from, I suppose. But no, I think it's, as I say, you get this insight into, like, just the fact that Dee doesn't age, which is kind of obvious because that's what vampires do. But no, I don't know, I like it. I like it. It's a good end. It's a good end.
Now, Kikuchi has had some other books of his adapted by Yoshiaki Kawajiri, which we shall probably come onto in later episodes. Demon City Shinjuku, I think it was Monster City released in here. Do you ever see that?
No.
Came out here in the 90s. I think it was one of the ones they showed on Channel 4, because I don't think I bought it, but I have definitely seen
right,
it.
Right, right.
And Wicked City.
I've seen AMVs of that. What? No,
I just like the way that that's the way you experience things.
A lot of things, a lot of my like intake in terms of...
I mean, there's things nowadays where I say, oh, I haven't seen that, but I have seen it in the monthly Sakuga.
Well, there you go.
But
the same as with Bloodlust, I've seen that pretty much scene for scene in AMVs before seeing the film. So it was kind of weird to finally put it together as it should be in a film rather than some Linkin Park to it or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of good bits for AMV makers in there, really, isn't there?
There's some great scenes. Great scenes.
For your sizzle reel, as you might want to call it.
But yeah, I would keen to watch Wicked City. That Shinjuku thing, that rings bells.
Yes, Monster City was how it's released in the...
Portions of that opening fight scene from Demon, that Monster City, is in that Keanu Reeves film, Johnny Mnemonic, whatever it's called.
Is that right? That. I've never seen
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I've got that on DVD, that film. I seen it as a kid years ago.
I remember me and my mates were really excited that it was coming out in 1995, and then we read the reviews. I don't think any of us ever saw it.
It's got Takeshi Kitano in it as well.
As in Ice-T and...
Dolph Lundgren as well.
That's the word. That's the name I was looking for.
You can say that's the word.
That's the word I was looking for.
I've not watched it all the way through, even since buying it on DVD.
Isn't there like a cybernetic dolphin or something in it as well?
Oh, I can't recall.
Dolphin.
I just remember like loving it as a kid because it was like, it was, you know, it was like Japanesey. There was a Japanese guy who had like a, what like Takeshi Kitano's character's got is like a razor wire made of laser. And like he's like whips people and cuts people in half and stuff. It's cool. It's a cool premise, but it just doesn't work. It's a film I just can't remember it working, but I bought it on DVD, regardless.
Waiting for it to come out on Blu-ray.
I'll be waiting a long time. I don't think anyone would care to see it. I can't imagine there being that good of a master copy.
That doesn't stop people putting things out on Blu-ray.
True.
Oh, here we go. There is a Johnny Mnemonic Blu-ray out in America, at least. You can get it for $9.49.
You should do a Johnny... What is it? How do you pronounce it?
Johnny Mnemonic. Mnemonic.
The thing that cracked me... I know it's totally off topic. Apparently, the storage space he has in his brain is like a gigabyte or something. There's something that's... It's unbelievably small. That's all you need to know. And obviously, the human brain is capable of... huge spaces, but it made me laugh. I'm sure it's something bizarre like that.
I'm looking at the one-star reviews now for Vampire Hunter D. Lots of them are just complaining about the same thing we had, like one's high price, low quality.
Is that the first film, I take?
That's the first film, yeah.
Okay.
Now, have you got the optimum release of Bloodlust, the DVD?
No.
All right.
Long story.
Because I don't have 5.1, so I was listening on the 2.0 mix, and it's very quiet in places.
The thing I watched on, because I've got it on DVD lying around somewhere, but it's a bootleg. I'll be honest, and the quality's not very good, and it's also got Japanese subs or something on, so it's in English. But yeah. You've got foreign subs. It just totally ruins it. But I managed to get hold of it as a download. And it was good quality, but it is very quiet, especially early on in the church. You know, the a lot of the background noise is fine. And then somebody will have like a quiet word with someone. And
yeah, I think that's the same problem I had. It was the sound effects, the music was
bob on
at the correct level in the mix. And then scene by scene... the dialogue might be quiet or it might be at the correct volume. Okay, it wasn't just me then.
Good. I would love to see it on Blu-ray.
Yes.
Because if they could kind of, I don't know, is there much remastering to be done? Because...
Oh, it's 2000, so probably not. You can probably get a film print of it. And Yeah, Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust. Let's see. Great premise. Worst actual story ever.
Take that back, idiot.
From Bang Potential. Thought I would try an anime to see what I was missing out on. Wow, this was horrible.
Oh, I thought I think it's a good film to show people who aren't really into anime at all.
I think I and everybody else should sample the best of a medium. I get that this isn't in that number, but again, wow. The mentality of someone that could enjoy this boggles my mind. Well, Bang Potential, we are boggling your mind right now. I'll try Ninja Scroll, and if the story development is as offensive, I'm checking out.
God, why you be? He's long gone.
Yes.
He's long gone, that guy.
Somebody else goes, looks promising, but gives us little to nothing. Again, people don't like the story. They like the animation. Can't compare. For all the hype over this one, it was really disappointing.
The sheer detail, like, I know on about the art, but the sheer detail is unbelievable.
I think some of these people are reviewing the wrong film, though. I think they're...
Oh, you've got to check out Bloodlust, then they've gone and watched...
Yeah, they've watched the other one. Because there's more people complaining about the picture quality.
Which is perfectly valid. It's literally perfectly valid. But no, this is... I think it's up there. It's up there with must-sees. Just because it looks so good.
Yeah, there's people complaining about it being dub-only, when actually the dub was the first soundtrack produced.
Really?
Yes. It had the English soundtrack produced before the Japanese one was finished.
So it
screened in Japan with the English soundtrack and Japanese subtitles. Oh. If you look for the trailer, the Japanese trailer, it's all in English.
And the voices are pretty good.
Yeah, some people I recognise. We've had John DiMaggio. Left hand is Mike McShane, who used to be on Whose Line Is It Anyway over in the UK.
Who? Wait, which one's that?
Mike McShane. He's the... he used to be a big fat lad. With the beard.
All right, okay. Rings bells.
He was in... we don't watch Doctor Who, do you? He was in Doctor Who.
That's... Because I much prefer Dee's voice in the second film.
Yeah, I think you're right there. That's
it's all right in the first film, but it's very 80s. I don't know. It seems like... I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. It's very 80s. It's a streamlined dub, so it will be very 80s. You've got Dwight Schultz as Bengay and the old man of Barbaroi. He was Howling Mad Murdoch in the 18, the original.
Jesus. We've got the big names, jeez.
Well, it's bigger than most anime dubs get.
What kind of fan base did, like, at the time, was it big at con? I don't know whether it was that kind of film, but...
No, I don't know, because... Mm-hmm. I mean, the original was big at the time, in the 90s. It was one of the ones people bought. Like your Akira, your Fist of the North Star film, your Vampire Hunter D, your Ninja Scroll, your Cyber City Oedo. Basically, and then, yeah, just generally anything Kawajiri.
Exactly.
The 90s were good to him. But yeah,
I don't watch Highlander.
It was one of the Beer and Curry manga video releases. Mm. That was the Friday night rent a manga video release, get some beer and curry in.
See, for me, it was a different thing. It was my, like, kind of... If people say, oh, you watch cartoons. No, it's violent, look. Look, it's violent.
it's not just for kids.
Yeah. That's what it was for me. Like, obviously, I was too young to drink, and I couldn't stomach a curry back then. But no, this is like... I think it's very easy to access Bloodlust as well. As I said, I think anyone can watch it and kind of appreciate it, unlike a lot of anime, obviously. I think this is the red line of 12 years ago.
Yeah, I didn't really hear much about it at the time, though. Mm-hmm. But maybe I wasn't in the right circles.
Because I imagine at the time, 12 years ago, this was, like, mind-blowingly pretty to look at.
It came out in the UK in 2004, so technically I probably entered it onto the video log database, so why I did not really paying attention to it.
I'm surprised. Like, Don't get, obviously, not everyone can see anything, but I thought this might have been something that, you know, you'd see.
There's plenty of things you'd be surprised I'm not seeing. Like Guyver.
We need to do an episode. Need to.
I could have bought the new Guyver series dirt cheap today. That was one of the bargains I could have got.
Oh, I'd be interested to check that out because, well, I like Guyver.
I think that was like £10 for the entire series.
Ooh, that is good. That is good. I remember I was going to pay like £25 for half. Then I thought, nah, I've got the original. What more do I need?
Is there anything left to say?
I think this... I know it's like not a back in 2002 thing like we do, but I think everyone should watch Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust if you've not already seen it, because I know a lot of people who like Leon and like I'd imagine like a lot of people we know will have seen it.
Yeah,
and probably
none of them wanted to come on and do this podcast. No,
well, it is Expo weekend.
That is true.
I thought Niall might have been game, but maybe he's frightened of vampires.
We've got him on in a few episodes' time, so
that's true. That's true. Yeah, Bloodlust is fantastic. The original's good, especially if you like Vampire Hunter D, which obviously it seems to have rekindled it in my heart. Definitely watch both. Definitely.
Yeah. I picked it up for £1.20 on eBay.
That is unbelievably good.
I think the postage cost me twice as much as that. But what it went for was £1.20. Somebody was selling it. What did the original go for? I might have actually gone for more.
I don't think I paid much from HMV where I got. I don't think I paid much.
I tell a lie. I got the original for 99p.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Do you have them side by side on your DVD shelf, or you're not organised like that?
I am organised like that, but they haven't been organised yet. They're in the pile. They're in the pile of stuff to be organised.
Ah, right. I suppose if you've just watched them, I'll let it slide.
There may be a 6 DVD gap going in the shelves, which they can go into soon for an upcoming episode of a TV show I need to watch again.
What? What do you mean a 6 DVD gap? I don't get it now.
Well, I've got a TV. We're going to watch Azuman Gadayo, aren't we? And so that's taking up the space of 6 DVDs on my shelf. So once I take those off the shelf to watch, put Vampire and D and some of its friends on the shelf.
Some of its friends.
In fact, yes.
So that's Halloween.
Not only is Niall coming on in a few episodes time, he's coming on the next episode. So.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Good stuff.
Yes, that next episode, which we are recording tomorrow, but you'll hear in a week's time, is going to be the next of our Mamoru Hosoda, The Road to Leeds Film Festival podcasts.
Oh, God.
The Road to Wolf Children. And we're going to watch One Piece Movie 6, which has a long subtitle which I cannot remember, but I shall say it when we record the episode tomorrow.
He's meant to be a One Piece fan.
It's the island of Baron something or other, I think, isn't it?
I'll be honest, I'll be truthful, I've not watched this yet, so I'll be watching this tonight.
Crack on. I watched the end of it again, so I need to go and watch the start of it again. Baron Omotsuri and the Secret Island. There we go.
Oh, it wasn't that long.
No. it's the Omotsuri bit I couldn't remember.
Oh, yeah, that's fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah, so we shall have Niall on and also Aaron Long.
Is it Aaron or Aaron? Did you say Aaron?
I have no idea. I've not spoken to him in real life yet. So
I'm going to say Aaron.
Let's guess how he pronounced. Okay, I'm going to go for Aaron. Aaron? You went for Aaron. I'll go for Aaron.
Then again, he is American, so it might be Aaron.
He's Canadian.
Oh, damn it! He's going to hear me! Well, let's not tell him about this. Let's not tell him about this part.
He's going to listen to it. He's always listened to it.
I know, but you'll be on the episode before he hears it.
No, he won't. This is going up tonight.
Gosh! Oh, damn it.
Go flip this quickly.
Okay. Well, we've got so many nationalities on this.
Yeah, we are international.
Japanese, Irish, Americans, Canadians. What's next? What other English-speaking countries do come we know?
Australians.
Oh, shouldn't we need an Aussie? Aussie listeners, we need you. Step up.
We've had Brummies.
Welsh? No, we've not had Welsh.
Not had any Welsh. Or any Scots. Anyway.
We've had Transylvanians with our vampire voices. Obviously, that's how Transylvanians speak.
That is absolutely true. We know this from the Cheeky Girls.
Are they from Transylvania?
They are from Transylvania.
Did not know that. Did not know that. That's unbelievable.
Learn something new every day.
Go and see Bloodlust.
Yes, go and get it cheap on eBay.
Don't watch the original first because you might think, I'm not going to bother with Bloodlust. Watch Bloodlust and watch the original in a few weeks or something. So it doesn't like kind of outweigh the original and stuff, you know.
You probably already own at least one of them anyway.
Probably. If you listen to this, you've probably seen it in AMVs.
Just watch enough AMVs, then rearrange them in the right order, and you'll be done. Right, anything you want to plug, Anthony?
On Twitter as normal, AntAskew, AntAskew, and I am on Twitch TV at twitch.tv/AntAskew, which was the same spelling as before. And that's it. That's it. I've not done much else. And I'm streaming all sorts there. Probably Alundra and Xenogears still at the moment, because I'm not going to finish them anytime soon. That's it.
Rightio. And you can find this podcast, as always, at dynamiteinthebrain.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/dynamiteinthebrain. You can find us on iTunes, so why not subscribe, write us a nice review, so more and more people can find out about the joy that is Dynamite in the Brain.
That would be nice. That would be nice.
And you can find me on Twitter at awesome_engine. And you can find my own personal website at awesome-engine.com, where I have written a brief review of the first three episodes of Bottom Biting Bug. It is excellent. Go watch it. More on it on the next episode.
Don't forget the Tumblr.
Oh, yes, the Tumblr. I always forget the Tumblr. dynamiteinthebrain.tumblr.com.
Are you doing Movember, Brian?
No. Oh. Not deliberately, anyway.
I'm going to do Movember.
You've already got a moustache. That's
your Halloween. I know, but it all comes off for Movember. So just to let everybody know, Brian can finally see me. I've got a webcam. Poor him.
What a revolting development.
That's the scariest thing of Halloween special of Dynamite.
I've been petrified the entire episode.
Oh, go and watch Bloodlust.
Straight up cacking myself. Cheerio.
Bye bye.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.